You're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Season 2, Episode 6 of Commentary Trek Stars, a show which looks at the work of Star Trek creators outside of Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm Gorbachev.
And today we are going to be taking a look at Nicholas Meyer's 6th movie.
That sounds right.
Company Business.
Business Company.
This is part 6 in our series on Nicholas Meyer as a director. And Company Business is a movie which was released in 1991, which is significant. September of 1991.
It is significant.
So, Max,
ah,
would you like to give a synopsis of Company Business?
Sure. This is an odd movie, but it follows some basic spy conventions. It starts with Gene Hackman, a grizzled old timey spy who's retired from the game, being brought back in by Clarence Boddicker from RoboCop and John Locke from Lost to go into, you know, East Berlin, what was walled off, and do a little spy exchange, taking one of their prisoners and exchanging it for one of their American prisoners. And
with the Soviet Union.
Right, obviously.
Yeah.
And this is while the Soviet Union is, you know, disassembling itself gradually. But apparently there's still some factions in there that are active, because it turns out that it's a trap of some kind, because the guy that they were going to get wasn't the guy that they were going to get. It was a different guy who was actually from America right there, and he wasn't a prisoner the whole time. But then it turns out he was the guy that they were going to get. And then because they know that, the bad guys on both sides, the CIA and the KGB, both want these two guys killed, and they get away.
Yeah, that's pretty much the basic idea, and it goes from there, and it becomes almost sort of like a buddy movie, a buddy spy movie.
It doesn't go from there. I mean, that's it. I mean, like 40 minutes in.
Okay.
The exchange goes down, and if you're viewing it, you're like, what just happened?
But the idea behind it is like when the exchange goes south, Gene Hackman and Mikhail Baryshnikov, who plays the Russian spy who's being exchanged. Sort of realize that both of them are mere pawns in a larger game.
Right, because the KGB actually did have a spy, and it was the guy that they were going to get.
But
he was pretending to be a different guy.
But whatever those things are, you know, the idea, the broad strokes are that these two guys decide to...
I understand that you want to keep the narrative
into
clean.
Their own hands.
You want to keep the narrative clean?
Uh-huh.
All right, so let's just say that two sides conspire with each other in order to maintain this ridiculous sort of arrangement that they've got going on. Because, you know, they're all part of these systems that have been designed to do spying. I mean, like, their entire world is collapsing. The whole Cold War, the end of the Cold War means the end of all these people's jobs. So, I mean, they don't really want that to happen. So, I mean, they're trying to secure their own positions for the future.
But
and, of course, Gene Hackman and Baryshnikov get caught in the middle. And Baryshnikov dances and does gymnastics. It's impressive stuff.
I think he's a ballerino, right?
Is it a ballerino?
Didn't we learn that on an earlier commentary where you said, what do you call a male ballerina?
Is it ballerino? Did I say that?
And then I looked it up and it actually was ballerino?
That sounds ridiculous.
Okay. Anyway, But just to sort of give people an idea of what they would be in for when they were watching the movie, what this movie is like, you know, not in terms of just like the plot mechanics, but in terms of like kind of what it is. It's essentially a buddy spy movie with Gene Hackman and Mikhail Baryshnikov.
Except there's not so much buddy as there is walking and talking.
Well, sure, but I mean, they become they have their drink, their Starka.
They have a drink. They have a drink together.
Uh-huh.
And when they're having that drink, get ready because the movie's over.
Well, no, they have the drink throughout. But yes, okay. So, what were your thoughts on the movie?
I went into this thinking, all right, Nicholas Meyer's movie I haven't seen. This will be interesting, and I was like, it's kind of neat how it's got this thing, it's got that thing, and then like the prisoner exchange scene happened, and I was like, oh, this is going to be cool. This is going to be intricate. Like, why is that guy pretending to be a different guy? And, like, what happened to the guy that they were trying to get? And then there's a point where Gene Hackman's character says to the other guy, like, come on, dummy, haven't you figured it out? He's a double agent.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, really? That's it? That's kind of a letdown.
So you didn't...
No, look, the movie falls apart. I mean, like, it doesn't... It's not like it's terrible, but, like, there's basically no ending. It, like, when the movie ends... Okay, you remember Ghost Protocol?
Yeah.
Imagine if they escape from Russia. Credits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's how this movie ends. Like, they get away. Credits.
Yeah.
And spoilers. When it happened, I was shocked. Because, like, it seemed like... This is like an extra 20 minutes. There's still like 20 minutes left.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's I had the same impression. You know, like, I watched it and then it ended, and then I literally had to rewind the movie and watch the last scene again so that I could see the ending, you know, because I thought that there was going to be, you know, there's some stuff which doesn't seem to be resolved. And it's the type of thing where I guess when you're watching it, you think, like, okay, I know that this is going to happen, and I know that this is going to happen, and now I got to see it happen. And they were just like, nah, we don't need to show it to you. You know what's going to happen. We know what's going to happen. Whatever. Movie's over.
The problem is that I don't know what's going to happen, because I think mm-hmm. that the implication is that none of those things happened.
Well, maybe.
I think the implication is that these guys did get away, but mm-hmm. they also didn't really succeed.
Yeah.
They kind of just succeeded at not being the patsies.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody kind of won.
Yes. Now, my personal thoughts on the movie are that it was good. I liked it. I liked it more than The Deceivers. And I what was the one that we watched before The Deceivers?
Volunteers.
Volunteers. I liked it more than Volunteers. You know, ultimately, I don't think it's as good as some of his earlier stuff, like The Day After or Time After Time. So I guess it's kind of like middle of the road, Meyer. I thought it was I thought it worked as a spy movie. You know, I thought that the intrigue and everything was cool. Some of it was a little cliche, like the whole, like, Terry O'Quinn's storyline and his portrayal, like, with him and his suites and everything. I'm like, yeah. Could you hit the nail on the head just a little bit harder? Because I'm not exactly sure what you're trying to imply here or whatever. But... You know, the performances I thought were pretty good, and I thought that the movie was really well constructed, and I really liked the a lot of the technical aspects. You know, like the editing, which we can talk about later on again by Ronald Roos. And
there's a shot of them of Baryshnikov and Hackman going down some stairs into the underground area
mm-hmm.
fairly early on to the movie. I thought it was amazing. I wanted that shot to be like a Windows background.
It had a glossy quality, which is not usually present in Meyer's movies, aside from like Star Trek VI. And also, I really loved the music, which was by Michael Kamen, and it was like Michael Kamen at his most diehardish. You know, I mean, it almost like if they would
was it Diehard Kamen?
It could have been Die Hard Kamen. It sounded almost more Die Hard than Die Hard. So yeah, on the whole, I mean, I think it was a very entertaining movie. Didn't have much in terms of depth, but
that's sort of the trick because mm-hmm. you think there's more.
Maybe, but maybe just because it's Meyer, you think there's going to be more. I don't know.
I thought of it like, you know, when I go into a spy movie, maybe this is just me. Maybe it's just me. Because, I mean, like, when you read a few, you know, Le Carre novels,
mm-hmm.
you get it into your head that when you go into a spy story, it's going to be intricate and deep and layered, and there's going to be all kinds of cool stuff that you're going to discover over the course of the story. And with spy movies... Time after time, I go into a spy movie volunteering to be deceived.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, the whole film industry their standard operating procedure. It's like company business for them is let's just give them a conspiracy that they can figure out in like 30 seconds so that they feel satisfied as viewers. And so I go in there to regularly be disappointed by very well-tread and very extremely discovered country. Very disappointing. I mean, I'm putting myself in their wrath on a regular basis, and I feel conned.
You know, I think the fact that it's Nicholas Meyer is tainting at least my opinion of it a bit. You know, if someone were to just put this movie in front of me and I were to watch it, I'd be like, yeah, does good. You know,
I'm going to swear a vendetta against spy movies.
But for it to be a Meyer movie, it doesn't live up to the high standard which he's usually at, or which he's sometimes at. Looking at this movie from Meyer's perspective, if you read The View from the Bridge, he seems to be pretty proud of most of his work. Even when the critics sort of bashed some of his movies like Volunteers, he was like, you know, I'm happy with it. You know, maybe it didn't play to the audience like I had been hoping, but, you know, I still think that I did what I set out to do.
I think it's because Meyer is an actual artist.
Mm-hmm.
And if the thing makes his point,
right,
then that was his goal, which I think is something that I wish more filmmakers had, that yeah. sense that it doesn't really matter how well it does or how it's received if you made your point. And I think that that's a really cool thing that we can talk about a filmmaker like Nicholas Meyer and talk about him as an artist, his point of view and what he's trying to say. Whereas I think a lot of modern filmmakers, you know, things don't get well received and they get depressed. But I mean, honestly, what are the statements? What are the sociological, political, moral, ethical statements being made by any of these things? I can't think of any movie that I've seen in the past few years that was as intricate as any of his movies.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that necessarily has anything to do with time. I think that's a general thing. I think if you were to look at the movies from the time period that he was making movies, you'd see a similar pattern. You know, it's not. I think that he's just sort of an outlier in general. You know, and there are people today who are doing things like that. I mean, you could look to Christopher Nolan, and
I do, and that's the one I can think of.
But
and that's the problem when there's only one person you can think of. No, that's not good.
I mean, there's others. You know, I mean, as much as you hate him, I mean, Paul Thomas Anderson is doing that.
That's ridiculous.
You know,
I think Tarantino did that with Django, but I'm not even sure if that was intentional.
I think it definitely was intentional. I mean, he's talked about that a lot. You know. But as far as Meyer's career is concerned, you know, in looking at that book, the one movie which he does not seem to be happy with is Company Business. He had to make a lot of compromises and, just in order to get the movie made, it sounds like. And, in the end, you know, the finished product doesn't quite resemble what he had originally envisioned. For one thing, the original title was called Dinosaurs, and that's a reference to it being
set in the Paleozoic era.
Right. And about two outdated...
A Velociraptor and a Triceratops.
No, two outdated spies, you know, spies from a different era. You know, the idea
cartoon dinosaurs, yes. One working for Russia, one working for the United States.
Mm-hmm. And while Gene Hackman... is age appropriate, Mikhail Baryshnikov really is not. I mean, you can even see that in the movie. There's a whole thing with, you know, his daughter, and he's like, yeah, they even comment on it.
Can you?
Yeah.
Because I have no idea how old that guy is in this movie.
He doesn't seem to be the same age as Gene Hackman. He seems too young.
He seems younger, but I don't... I didn't think of him as being, like, so young that he couldn't have had an adult daughter.
Well, no. I mean, they make it work for the story. It does work in the movie, but it could have worked better if that character had been older, I think. You know, it would have just been, there would have been less explanation and everything.
Or at least looked older.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, and I think while you know, Baryshnikov and Hackman's performances are fine, from what, you know, Meyer was saying and what everyone else in Hollywood says, Gene Hackman may may or may not be the easiest person to work with in Hollywood. Now, the interesting thing about this movie is that it came right before Meyer was offered Star Trek VI.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the plot and the themes and the message of Star Trek VI, is very, very similar in a lot of ways to company business.
Mm-hmm.
Like, eerily so.
Not really. Not eerie.
It's eerie in a bit.
Were you creeped out by the eeriness of the similarities to the plot?
When I was watching Company Business and I saw how similar it was, I felt a bit of a shudder go down my spine.
That's really bizarre. I thought it was just kind of funny how it seemed like the Cold War did sort of define the culture.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of you know, just media in general was shaped by it. A lot of the way people think about things was shaped by the political dynamic at play. And, I mean, it's why we had things like, you know, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, a ripoff of the Puppet Masters. I mean, like, all of those things, like, those things are the result of, you know, political concerns. So, like, these large-scale, you know, global concerns end up filtering down into the subconscious of individuals, and that subconscious ends up informing the large-scale political status of things. And so it makes sense that there would be a lot of, you know, art that represents that particular dynamic. So seeing the downfall of the Soviet Union and how that shapes the art for the next few years makes a lot of sense. And we know, because of what happened in the later years, that the end of the Cold War was a very significant thing for the intelligence community throughout the world. But the end of, you know, knowing who the bad guy was rather significant. It made it very difficult for intelligence operatives to know what the hell to do with themselves. And so Star Trek VI seems prescient, and Company Business seems sort of, like, obvious. Like, of course they'd be confused. Of course they wouldn't know what to do. And of course they would be somewhat self-serving in their activities. And of course, like, you know, the political operatives on both sides are going to, like, at least have a tacit agreement to work to make sure that they're okay. Because once the Iron Curtain falls, and once, you know, they start dissolving Russia, the KGB is going to be in some trouble, and the CIA, they're going to, like, either be, you know, like, you know, replaced, fired, or just discontinued, because there's a huge industry there. So what happens when the industry has no supply or demand? It just collapses. So it makes sense that this would happen. Of course we'd have lots of things that are about it. And of course we'd end up not knowing who the bad guy is and then, you know, getting hit by terrorists.
But, I mean, I don't disagree with any of that. And if it was just a case of, like, you know, Nicholas Meyer making two Cold War movies back to back, I'd be like, yeah, whatever. But, like, there's a lot of stuff in the two, like the take, like the what he has to say about the Cold War is very, very similar in both movies. I really do think that it was a case of, like, he's like, Cold War is ending. I've got something to say with that. I'm going to do that in Company Business. Company Business gets made. He's like, I wasn't able to say what I wanted to say with that movie. Let me try it again here in Star Trek VI.
Right.
You know, and like there's like, I mean, just the whole concept of the movie, you know, like even the original title Dinosaurs, you know, it, the idea that these guys who
Star
were
Trek VI, call very, them dinosaurs,
very, yeah, they were very important. You know, they had, like, some of the
Captain Kirk has to go back in time to rescue some dinosaurs.
The most important jobs.
Keep them from going extinct.
You know, during the Cold War, now all of a sudden they're completely useless.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Star Trek VI, same idea, you know? Mm-hmm. Captain Kirk dealing with the fact that he's no longer needed. He's obsolete. Regardless, you know, the similarities between Company Business and Star Trek VI are very striking. And the fact that they were released 3 months apart, I think, is also really interesting. I think it would make for actually a really good double feature, something which I'm very curious about. And I think I'm going to try that at some point relatively soon. So we're in agreement that Star Trek VI is the superior film of the two, correct?
Yeah, it has an ending.
Also, an interesting little Meyer trademark again is, you know, we've talked about how he's obsessed with the bridge on the River Kwai. Another thing which he seems to be obsessed with, the Eiffel Tower. Paris, but in particular the Eiffel Tower. He brings it up in the third Sherlock Holmes book.
Yeah.
He brings it up in Confessions of a Homing Pigeon.
Well, because both of those things have France segments.
No, but like the way that he brings it up, like, and also like not just the Eiffel Tower, but like going to the top of it.
Mm-hmm.
In Sherlock Holmes, he's like, it's kind of, you know, it's very touristy to go up to the top of the Eiffel Tower, but it's one of those things that even though it's a hassle and everything, you got to wait in line and you got to do it. And, you know, Sherlock Holmes is no exception. He has to do it too. And, you know, when he said that, I was like, because Confessions of a Homing Pigeon, you know, his main characters operate the elevators.
For like a chapter.
Yeah, for like a chapter. And now in this one, the climax of the movie involves going up to the Eiffel Tower and everything. And it was weird because I just came back from Paris and we went to the Eiffel Tower. And it was one of those things where, like, if you say to me, like, do you want to go up to the Eiffel Tower? I'd be like, sure. And then you say, okay, well, it costs $20 and you got to wait in line for 45 minutes. And I'd be like, oh, no, definitely not.
It's not a ride.
There's nothing about that which sounds appealing to me.
Yeah.
But I have to say, reading, the Canary Trainer and hearing him say, like, Sherlock Holmes, hearing him say, Sherlock Holmes says, you gotta do it, it made me think for an extra split second, do I have to do it? Because Sherlock Holmes says I have to do it. And it's Sherlock Holmes being written by Nicholas Meyer. I kind of think I have to do this. And then we get there, and then they're like, you want to do it? And I'm like, no.
Nicholas Meyer says that John Watson says that Sherlock Holmes you've got to go to
it
the
wasn't
top
John
of the
Watson.
Eiffel Tower.
It wasn't John Watson because that was the one which was narrated by Holmes himself.
That's right.
So,
yeah. So it's only two levels down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Right. I've seen the Eiffel Tower. I'm not impressed.
Well, living in Chicago, I guess, you know, we're not going to be as easily impressed with it as some because we've got the Willis Tower.
Whatever that is. I don't know what that is. Pretty sure you're talking about the Sears Tower.
Yeah, where you can jump off of it and fight robots and stuff.
That's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
It costs $20 and it's a 45-minute line, but, I mean, you can do that.
So, there were a number of Star Trek collaborators on this project.
Clarence Boddicker.
Is he the guy from RoboCop?
Yeah.
Kurtwood Smith is his name. And he...
Riker's commanding officer, too.
Yeah, Kurtwood Smith would go on to be in Star Trek VI. You know, I guess it makes sense. You know, even...
And Voyager.
Even if the movie wasn't too... Meyer's liking, that doesn't mean that he didn't meet people on it and form lasting relationships. I think that's something which you see a lot in movies. Like, I keep on going back to, like, The Faculty, that happened with The Faculty, where half the cast of that movie was in Robert Rodriguez's other
movies. To bring
up
The Faculty again.
Terry O'Quinn, who would be in Pegasus in
yes.
Star Trek The Next Generation, as well as things like Lost and everything. Terry O'Quinn is...
You might know him from Lost.
He's such a good actor. Like, I buy him in anything.
He died in X-Files continuity twice.
Yeah, because he was on Millennium, right? And
No, he died in X-Files continuity twice. If you include Millennium, he's still alive.
Okay.
So there are three Terry O'Quinns in X-Files continuity. One of them is alive. Two of them are dead.
Okay.
One of them dies in the movie. The other one dies in season 7. No, 8.
I forgot that he was in the movie. He's so good in that movie and that one scene that he's in.
Where he gets blown up?
Yeah. Oh, man, that movie is so good. I'm sorry. I keep on thinking about X-Files, the movie, and I just... That movie is excellent. Excellent.
You're a terrible person.
Stephen Charles Jaffe, you know, who is a longtime collaborator with Nicholas Meyer, we've talked about a couple times. He produced and was the second unit director on both this and Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. And Ronald Roos, who we talked about on our Volunteers episode, was also the editor on this movie. And I think this movie is really well put together again. So there's your Star Trek people. A lot more than there were in The Deceivers, obviously.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's more than two.
Mm-hmm. So, any final thoughts on company business?
It's always interesting seeing things that are odd. And this is a particularly odd spy movie in that it does seem to not really care so much about the big picture. It is kind of a super localized, like, on-the-ground story of two guys,
mm-hmm.
which is novel. It's interesting. It is interesting, the idea of, like, ending the story when they get away, because it does make sense. I mean, if you were caught in between, you know, the KGB and the CIA and you managed to, like, get out, you wouldn't turn back and go face them. You'd just keep going. You'd say, all right, my name's Steve. Give me a last name.
Jaffe.
I'm a painter from Texas whose wife recently died, and now I'm moving to, let's say, the Ukraine. Just make up a bunch of nonsense in order to establish my identity so you don't have to deal with any of this craziness, because they'll kill you.
Mm-hmm.
Of course the story would end with them escaping. But as a viewer, I mean, I've watched the bad guys conspiring, and I've watched these, you know, these diabolical guys try to get these two guys who never did anything wrong. And, like, they know. Like, there's a point where they're like, are we really going to kill this guy? He didn't do anything wrong. And they're like, yeah, we're going to kill this guy. He didn't do anything wrong. But we're going to kill him. So of course they would get away, and of course they wouldn't deal with any of the larger problems, because it's too big for two guys to handle. Especially one of them, he's a ballerino. What's he going to do? So it's weird. It feels unsatisfying as a viewer, but I mean, like, I'm happy that I saw it, because I mean, I've never seen a movie that had such an unsatisfying ending because the two guys get away. They got away! It makes sense that it would end there.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah, I enjoyed this movie more than Meyer's last two. I don't think that it's as significant as some of his other movies, but I mean, in some ways, I see it as sort of this alternate reality. Like, there's a thing that I sort of think about a lot when it comes to filmmakers' careers, and that's the movies that they didn't make. You know, and there are times where, like, you'll hear things like...
Well, you want to imagine the parallel universe where Kubrick made AI?
No, more of, like, the hired gun sort of take, where you hear things like Kevin Smith was offered Arthur, and he came really close to making it because he read the script and he thought it was really good. And he was talking about making Arthur. He said he came very close, and in the end he decided not to. And one of the reasons was because he didn't want to be that guy. He didn't want to be the hired studio gun. And, you know, part of me thinks, like, man, if Kevin Smith had made Arthur, that would be a really good movie. And yet it wouldn't be up to the standards that most of Kevin Smith's movies are up to. I'm a huge Kevin Smith fan. You know, I'll put that right out there. You know, I think that he's only made one movie, which isn't a 4-star movie. But then I think, like, the guy who chooses to make Arthur is not Kevin Smith. Like, the guy who chooses to make Arthur is not, like, if Kevin Smith...
Hold on. Are you saying that the guy who made Arthur isn't Kevin Smith?
No. Here, let me rephrase it. The point that I'm getting at here is that when I look at company business, I see an alternate reality where Nicholas Meyer is a gun for hire, and he would make these movies, just he could make movies like this in his sleep because he's that good at it. But if he were to do that, we would not care about Nicholas Meyer's movies because you know, while he does only make like one movie every few, well, now, I mean, he hasn't made a movie forever because no one will give him money, but you wouldn't look forward to the new Nicholas Meyer movie because even if it was really well made, there would be nothing to it, you know?
I know what you mean. Okay. I just don't think that the I think that the hired gun thing is not as loaded as some people think it is.
It's there are plenty of people who manage to
go back and forth.
Yeah, there are people who manage to go back and forth. There are people who manage to do it, you know, but I don't know. I mean, there's something about, you know, like a Tarantino movie, you know, and it's like we only get like five of them, you know, like a decade or less than that. But when they do come out, you know, it's really special and, you know, whatever. So that's it for company business. As always, you can find us at CommentaryTrackStars.com, where we do our other show, Commentary Track Stars. And you can find us on Twitter at ComTrackStars or email us at ComTrackStars@gmail.com or go to Trek.fm and, you know, go to the forum. Leave us some feedback. I always post a thread where for each episode where we look for feedback, and it's very rare that we get a response. And when we do, it's usually from someone who's on the network with us, which, you know, doesn't really count, I guess.
Well, it's not that surprising. It's, you know, it's forums.
Yeah.
The people who are there most often are the people who,
I guess so,
like to hang out there.
Go to the forum. There's no reason why this forum shouldn't be, like, thriving by this point. Go there.
Well, it is a forum.
Talk about some Star Trek. They talk about Star Trek on the forum.
Yeah. Which Star Trek is best? The original series.
They have a thread for that, you know?
Job done. I just solved that.
Okay.
It's okay. We don't need that thread anymore.
All right. So, yeah, there's many ways to contact us. We look forward to hearing your feedback. And we are almost done with Nicholas Meyer. We've only got one movie left and then the recap. And next week's movie is his final movie, Vendetta.